Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode 303. Thanks for joining us. This week we've got a good program. I have an interview, a sit-down with worshipful brother Michael Blasius, a close friend of mine who also responded to the 10 questions with 10 worshipful masters. So I think we only have one or two more to go, and then we'll have fulfilled this segment. But we may continue on and grab a few more just because they are great segments. And these are great segments, not just because we're interviewing worshipful masters, but because we're gleaning these great insights. Mike Blasius and I had the 10 questions, and we had a conversation as well. So I think we dove a little bit deeper in this segment, and I feel that I probably talked more than I should have in this interview, so I do apologize for that. But nonetheless, great conversation, good questions, and so we'll get into that in just a few minutes. I do want to take just a moment and let you all know that I did rework the way you get to our support the show links. So when you come to the website, wcypodcast.com, of course, you know, we have a large infrastructure to take care of, and we need ways that we can support the program. This is listener-supported education. You know, for the first few years, I had to front everything. It became too much of an expense, so we had to open it up for supporters and producers, right? So we've done that, and the way people do that is by coming to us and essentially donating funds somehow. I think we kind of hit the gamut as far as the different ways you can accomplish that and become a producer. So if you hover over support the show now, you'll see six different drop downs. One says make a direct donation. So if you click that, you're going to see two links. One will say make a one-time donation. I'll say click donate. You pick the amount, whether it's 50 cents or a dollar, $5, whatever it is, you donate. It's a great option. The second says make a monthly donation, and it says subscribe. So you can become a contributor to the program for $2 a month. You can become a fellow for $5 a month, or you can become a producer for $10 a month. Now, if any of these options don't work for you, you are able in your own PayPal to go ahead and set up an auto payment. There have been a few guys who have done it in the past, so I know it's possible. Another way is to go to our limited edition shop. Also, the link is there. That's where you pick up our limited edition lapel pin, which has an exclusive design to us. Nobody else makes it. It's ours. You can't pick it up at your Grand Lodge sessions or anything like that. We also sell cufflinks and our money clip, and we have like one tie bar left. And of course, our newest item is the Mason's Lady car decal. We ran a pre-sale. They were $9. It's a 5x5 vinyl decal. Now they are 10 now that we have them in stock, and they're 10 bucks. We ship anywhere, and that's it. It's just a flat $10. There's no extra shipping cost on those. So check those out. It's a really cool design. Make sure when you're putting these on, you're also then, you'll take the backing off, slap it on the car where you want it. I include an alcohol pad too to clean the car area where you're going to do that. You'll slap the sticker on, and then you peel back slowly the plastic covering so that all that sticks to your car actually is just the white Mason's Lady heart with the square and compasses. So definitely check it out. And then, of course, we have a couple other ways. So we do have our Onnit, so Alpha Brain, which you shop on onnit.com. You go through our links. You use the promo code WCY at checkout. You get 10% off, and you get some cool stuff. So what do I like about Onnit, right? So Alpha Brain, it is increased focus. It's all natural, vegan approved. You get some things like lucid dreaming, even heightened awareness. And the best thing about all this is that there is no caffeine. It's about as great as you're going to get. There are other companies that have nootropic vitamins, but I prefer Onnit. I've been using it for years. It's good stuff. Additionally, there are things like hemp force protein, which has great protein count. Of course, hemp protein isn't a cheap protein, so do be aware that you know, it's like a 15-day supply is what you're getting for your money on that. So don't be surprised. It's expensive. I get it. But check it out. It's a really nice supplement. And again, 10% off when you use our promo code WCY. And by going through our links, they actually kick a little bit back to the show. Our biggest sponsor is buybankersbest.com. So it's Bankers Best Beard and Skin Care, run by Brother Levi Banker out of Missouri, who has created amazing products. And you can just click on the link there to read more about that and how essentially 50% of the profits on certain products come back to this show through his gracious support. And of course, use the promo code BB, as in Bankers Best, WCY. So BBWCY357 at your checkout, and you're going to get 20% off. And the last but not least, we have a Thrive account. So the world's only wearable nutrition dermafusion technology type place that offers some really interesting supplements is Thrive. So if you're into Thrive, we also have a Thrive account. And by doing your shopping through our link, you help support the show. So we're just trying to come up with dynamic and interesting new ways to allow you to better yourself, whatever you're into, and then allow you to go ahead and support the show that way. And then, of course, there's the day-to-day help that I personally get from Brothers Blend Coffee. Every morning, I start off with a cup of Brothers Blend Coffee. So check out brothersblendcoffee.com, and you can get some of your own Brothers Blend Coffee made for you exclusively by the Brothers of Milford Lodge out in Massachusetts. So check it out. Now that we've paid the bills, let's go ahead and get right into the program. We're just going to lead right off into this great interview again with worshipful brother Michael Blasius.
All right, everybody, we are back this week, and we have another 10 for 10 for 10 Worshipful Masters segment and 10 questions. So this week I have a good close friend of mine from Lodge, where I'm an honorary member, actually. He is a past guy for our Lodge of Instruction Club that travels around our Lake County area here in Illinois. So if you would, say your name, your lodge number, and under whose jurisdiction.
I'm Michael Blasius. My lodge is Rising Sun, number 115, in the first northeastern district of the state of Illinois, which falls under the jurisdiction of our right worshipful Grand Master, Robert Johnson.
You're under the jurisdiction of the Grand Lodge of Illinois.
Yeah, the Grand Lodge of Ancient Free and Accepted Masons of the state of Illinois.
All right, so just to dive in, what's the biggest issue in Freemasonry today? And this is prefaced, I should say, all your opinion only.
Biggest issue of Freemasonry, I'm going to have to say, is our exclusion.
Exclusion. Can you go into that?
Our fraternity is based on faith. You know, people of. We are asked if we believe in a higher power. A lot of people in this time may not associate a belief in a higher power, but may actually have one. It's easier, though, to fall into a feeling of, I'm not Christian, I'm not Jewish, I'm not Muslim, I'm not Buddhist, so I don't belong to any of these big religions, so I am a nothing. And people then easily say, oh, then you're atheist. And people will then just assume, yes, I'm nothing, so I must be an atheist. Unfortunately, we need to look into digging that out of people. I mean, I myself, when I was a young man, I called myself an atheist for that exact same reason. I didn't know where I fit religiously. And, you know, I was told, you believe in nothing, so you're an atheist. And I said, then I'm an atheist. It wasn't until I became older and I realized I was more spiritual than even a lot of the religious people that I knew. It wasn't until I thought about the connectedness of all of us that I found a spirituality that I was able to identify with. Not everybody has that journey, though, and still may just call themselves atheist. And we just, as Freemasons, hear that word and, you know, well, you're not allowed. I could also talk about that we don't allow women, but that might be for another question.
Yeah, that's true. So I think I fell into that same category as well. So before I joined a lodge, I actually didn't believe in anything. I kind of just lied about it and joined to see what it was about. And I think through my experience in Lodge is, you know, where I think I found my belief system, somewhere in, like, you know, mystic texts type stuff. But next question is, what is your biggest failure or fear, your biggest fear of failing at something? What would that be?
In life or as the master?
I would say, if you want to answer both, if they relate to each other, and if not, just in Masonry.
I guess they actually could relate to each other. Becoming master, I found that, you know, I've had to search through the stages. You know, you think you're learning, and you do. You realize, you know, you're bettering yourself, and then you're taking charge of other people in the lodge. I myself am a hands-off management style person. I prefer it to be the same way. If somebody tells me to do something, I'll do it on my own time. Don't ask me to do it. Don't ask me how it's going. Don't tell me what, you know, ask me what am I doing it on and about. It'll get done and leave it alone. I offer the same management style to my lodge members and also, I guess, to the other people in my life. That doesn't work necessarily well for everybody. So I've had to learn to be more hands-on with those people that require a little more attention. And I guess it's helped me relate a little better with people We'll see how it goes with leadership, though.
Cool, yeah. So what he just alluded to actually is Worshipful Brother Blasius is actually on our Grand Lodge of the State of Illinois Leadership Committee. So he'll be working quite a bit with workshops and things on the Grand Lodge level. And all of our committees, for the first time, I think, in a long time, they're having a lot of crossover and a lot of collaboration, which is key. And Mike's no stranger to collaboration, so thanks for your service to the Grand Lodge, for sure. Uh-huh. Next question is, where do you draw inspiration from?
I draw inspiration from, for me personally, maybe quiet time is when I find my most inspiration. I'll take a walk or just sit in silence. I like taking a shower, for an example. In that shower and doing something that's mundane but doesn't have direct noise, that allows me to free up my mind and come up with thoughts that I want to process, that I want to think about. I guess also first thing in the morning, or if I wake up in the middle of the night, I will jot down dreams that I've had or thoughts that I've had. That's always been a source of almost like my brain telling me that you need to think about this.
Yeah, that's interesting. So if I could pull that thread a little bit, when you find inspiration in those times, do you necessarily find that it deals with you like in a spiritual level, or is it just an amalgamation of, it could be anything, like you wake up in the middle of the night, we're having a pancake breakfast.
sometimes it's panic, not very often though. Mostly it's even thinking about relationships, talking with people, or just, I guess my brain also works better if I throw out the knowledge that, like, if I have an idea or a story or something that I can just pull out of my head, if I can write it down or put it on something, I then don't have to be distracted by it all the time trying to remember it to make sure that I don't forget it.
Yeah, I do the same thing. That's interesting that you do that. Frequently I'll try to remember something and then I'll remind myself, like, hey, don't just wait to remember this. Like, put a note in your phone or something, right? And it's funny because I've looked back and I found notes that are like 5 years old, and it'll say like, my son Emmett, you know, at this point he's 8, but it was like, Emmett was 4 years old. It said, Emmett came up to me and told me about this dream he had, and I'll read it and go, man, that's wild. You know? So
can't trust your brain to remember everything.
Yeah, that's true. Why did you join? And this is I'm cheating, so this is like the 11. It'll be an 11 question thing, but it's a 2-in-1. Why did you join Freemasonry? And then subsequently, why did you decide to get in line? And for our profane listeners out there, what I'm asking is why he joined Freemasonry and why he decided to get in the administrative, progressive, elective offices within the lodge.
I'd looked into Freemasonry for several years before I actually joined. And I did the research on the types of, I didn't know definitely what I know now about the different styles and types of lodges. At the time, I was just looking for lodges. And I did look at the basic ideas of population is really what I was looking at. So, and drive time. I didn't want to, living north of Chicago, I saw several lodges in the city of Chicago, in the suburbs. I actually looked at co-Freemasonry. I didn't know the difference between them, other than at the time I saw, you know, there was a lodge that allowed men and women and the lodges that only allowed men. I liked the idea of the lodges that allowed men and women, but there were none close, and they didn't seem active. Their websites were old and, you know, GeoCities style. So not that the lodges locally were much better, but I saw that what happened was I had a neighbor. I had kind of left my search alone. I wasn't satisfied with anything. My children became friends with a neighbor's children. And then the parents we met. And as we started hanging out, I found out that my neighbor was a Mason in the town that we lived. And so I'd asked to come take a look. I went and joined, you know, went to dinner a couple times, and then I petitioned the lodge.
That's crazy. Who's your neighbor?
Dave Metcalf. He lived up here now, but he's moved down to Tennessee.
Oh man, okay, yeah. All right, that's cool.
Hopefully, he's finding a new home in a lodge in Tennessee.
Yeah, so Tennessee, been down there, visited Doric Lodge, great worshipful master down there, Brother Al. If you're listening, I don't forget about you. You're still amazing. So, Mike, why did you get in line though? What made you get into the administrative side of a lodge? I mean, it's so bleh.
Well, at the time, I didn't look at it as the administration of the lodge. What impressed me a lot when I was getting into Masonry was watching these guys at the degrees and then an opening and closing lodge, performing all this work from memory. And I always had an ability to memorize things. So I guess I fell into it that I was at, you know, I saw some spots where there was nobody sitting, and I was asked, or I asked, I can't remember now, to memorize and fill in. And then after sitting in a chair and doing some work, you kind of just, that at that point, then you kind of fall into the line of, well, yeah, I can do a little more work.
Right.
And then you pick up the duties of, yeah, sure, I'll mow the lawn. Yeah, I can help keep the lodge clean and repair it. And then next, you know, you're cooking dinner and worship master.
So you kind of alluded to it there. I knew you were going to touch on it. So if you guys also, if you know Mike, cool. If you don't know Mike, I know we have a lot of local listeners. He's a sucker for ritual. He was involved in the Lake County School of Instruction, which is our local instruction club that travels from lodge to lodge most of the months of a year. And they hold an instruction club at each lodge where they cover different aspects of the different degrees, where they teach how to do it, what to say, how to walk, where to walk, how to do everything you could imagine. Illinois is very militaristic in style. It's probably the most stringent in the 50 states. And the first time I met Mike, actually, he was the guy at an instruction club meeting here at Waukegan. We're actually recording this in the dining room at Waukegan 78. He came out here and he brought the sticks that we use to imitate the rods in case, you know, lodges don't have enough rods to go around when we're practicing. But why do you love ritual so much, Mike?
Well, I'll tell you, for 4 years, I dragged those rods around with me every month to a different lodge. You know, I'd always ask somebody, you know, if we're going to another lodge, hey, you know, your lodge is next month. Would you mind taking these rods so I don't have to haul them with me? Occasionally, I get a yeah, but oftentimes it was a, oh, I can't get in, or, oh, I got a Prius and I can't fit these things, you know, some kind of story. Why I like ritual is, again, I've always had an affinity to memorize stuff. I guess it's, you know, started in school, learning mathematics and the formulas that you had to, and physics, that you had to study these formulas, and that always seemed natural to me. And then when I, you know, got in the lodge, and I'm seeing these, it started small. You see the junior deacon giving his ritual, you know, which then you learn, you think, oh, I can do that, no problem. And then until you get beat up a few times by a pro, you know, oh, you messed that up. You didn't do this right. You're stepping wrong. You're, you know.
The vultures, yeah. The ritual vultures.
Right. You got to pause. Your corners are sloppy, you know. But I felt good when I would do these things, you know, in a manner that was acceptable to the, you know, the ancient brothers who overlook the ritual and floor work in our area. And eventually, you know, we also have, I mean, a book. I guess not all jurisdictions have a book. We have a book that we can look on. And it's easy to sit and read while you're not doing anything, or driving, I suppose. Well, I guess you don't read while you're driving, or at least...
Some of us do.
At least you shouldn't say you read while you drive. I recite while I'm driving. How about that?
Yeah, your steering wheel knows every lecture.
That's right. And my you know, wife, again, knows some of the, you know, some of the boring stuff, the non-secretive stuff, and my kids, too.
There. My wife knows everything. It's ridiculous.
Mine won't listen.
I make Corey go back and forth with me on the senior deacon's lecture. I'm like, just sit there and prompt me if I stop. So she knows the whole... We've done it in the car, and I'll be reciting it, and I'll stop, and then she'll fill the word in for me.
Nice.
I'm just like, man, you're awesome. When are we joining a Co-Masonic
Lodge? That's right. She'll be ready to step in.
Yeah, she's going to be ready to go. So here's an interesting question, and I think this one will be key for anybody who is going to be a worshipful master at some point. Maybe you're just joining in the line of officers or whatever. But what's the best advice you were given as a Mason? Could be regarding anything. You know, maybe you just got depressed at a point with the repetitiveness, or maybe you were too zealous to do this or that. What's the best advice you got?
I think the best advice I was given, keep coming back. That applied, I don't know if I answered enough with the previous question, you know, why I liked ritual. Sure, I got frustrated at the beginning, not being able to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told, you know, hey, you did a great job. You keep coming back and, you know, you're going to get better. And it's too, with learning the deeper meanings of our stories, of our lectures, of our degrees, you just have to see them more and more. And also, the hidden meaning that we kind of don't talk about too much, or at least it's not a public knowledge, is the fellowship that we share. Yeah. You're coming back so you can hang out with your, start off just as your lodge members and become your buddies.
Yep.
So that advice early on, just keep coming back, made it all fall into place.
Yeah, I think that's key. There are guys, and I find that the guys who don't come back after a first degree to practice the next meeting or whatever, mm-hmm. those are the guys who fall off the train.
Yeah.
And that's great advice, actually.
I could see you being afraid. I could see being afraid if you just learned something, and it's totally makes no sense at all. You have no comparison anything to the words and things that we do. So if you don't try and do it again, you're going to like forget or think you're going to forget, and then you're going to be like, oh, I can't go back and embarrass myself.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think that's why kind of we started doing some lodge etiquette stuff on why we want to, you know, what the gavels mean, how to do this, how to do that, how to come into a lodge if you're late, how to leave a lodge, that kind of thing. In fact, well, Spence, come on. You guys are listening at home. One of the guys in our district who's a master is holding a special meeting at his lodge in Libertyville this Thursday. That's by the time you guys are listening to this, it's 6 days old. But it's going to be on etiquette. You know, it's just a big thing on etiquette. And so he has, you know, members coming out to come to that so that they don't feel weird or embarrassed. Because I sure would be embarrassed.
Is it similar to a knife and fork, right, where you go over the stuff in a non-threatening manner at a dinner or whatever?
Maybe. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. I think he's actually opening a lodge, and he's probably just going to go through everything. But
cool.
It'll be interesting to see. Most of the time I hear the knife and fork degree is literally just Mason's pigging out.
I've never been to one.
Yeah, me neither. So if you could make one change in Freemasonry, like if you could enact it with just a snap of your fingers, or in here, let's say you're Grand Master of the State of Illinois, you code 3B. what's it going to be?
Well, my one-time code 3B, I'm certain will be, people who know me know, probably RJ, I'm sure, already knows what I'm going to say. We are we claim to be a progressive moral science. You know, and throughout history, we've been an organization that has worked together to right wrongs, to move forward. This country was founded by many Masons on that same, you know, premise. Nowadays, we even say that we, you know, cannot be treasonous, where at the time they were treasonous. They were absolutely going against the government because they didn't believe that how they were living was right. Well, in the 300 years that, you know, we celebrate as regular Masonry, times have changed a lot. We've now, not all jurisdictions, but most jurisdictions allow people from any color or religion or sexual orientation, which is awesome. Those things are great. But we've overlooked half of our population and not allowed women into our society. I mean, there's arguments. I've heard many on both sides. But I can't feel that, you know, if we're progressive and we're moving forward in a world where everything is, you know, men and women are equal, why we insist without doubt, without question, that is unallowed. I think that we're stepping on our own tail, that we're pushing ourselves into obscurity, and people are going to look at us as a misogynistic, backwards group.
Yeah, and so to tease that out is that the rapid response, I say rapid and I should also say rabid response that I get when I mention that kind of stuff is guys who jump on me and they go, we're a fraternity. It says in our obligation, men only. And my question is, but why does it say men only? It's the same reason to me where I feel like it says men only because it was written at a time of a patriarchy.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same reason you didn't teach people how to read. So
we have bad pronouns. When you're referring to a man, it's a man. When you're referring to several, it's men. When you're referring to a woman, or one female, it's a woman. When it's several, it's women. When you're talking about a group of males and females, it's a group of men.
Yeah.
We're talking, you know, it's a bad pronoun. It's not proper. It's not
It's like, you know, when women can never go to the moon, guys.
Mankind.
Yeah, just so you know, women can never go to the moon, right? Because it's one small step for a man and one giant leap for mankind. Not womankind. Sorry. Sorry, ladies. I know I've got some listener, female co-masons out there who listen to the show. Sorry, you're not allowed on the moon because, you know, pronouns.
Right. You're including the A, you know. That's still argued by a lot of...
Oh, yeah. When I say one small step for a man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's because that's what he said.
It is. Just because the Motorola sound recorder didn't pick that up, it doesn't mean it didn't happen.
So that's interesting, though. Also, I love the answer. It's highly controversial. I'm going to have all kinds of listeners who probably just turned it off 5 seconds ago.
Can I add one more little...
Yeah, reason? Absolutely.
Now, you'd asked earlier about my inspiration. I said quiet times. Another half of my inspiration are my children. I have three daughters who I love dearly and give me all the insights to the world. And it kind of saddens me to think that I would never be able to sit and lodge with them. You know, I look forward to when they're adults and I can have coffee with them or have drinks with them. And, you know, but I also would love to be able to sit in a lodge and, you know, see them on that level, to watch them, you know, grow and change and argue about what color the toilet paper should be in the box.
Yeah, you know, I think I wouldn't have understood that question, or your answer rather, very well, even though I try to be really insightful and put myself in other people's shoes. But I, too, also have a daughter now. I've got three sons and a daughter, and things change. I think, you know, the fact I mentioned that my wife listens to me do the ritual, and she can tell me the ritual, and all of my friends tell me, you know, my wife is a better Mason than I am sometimes. And I just feel that, you know, within the regular scope of regular Masonry, you know, I don't think it'll ever truly happen that they'll allow women to come in. But if they do, it'll be awesome. We had a town hall here, Mike. I don't remember if you were here. Our grandmaster came out, and one of the members of Waukegan 78 said, "My wife wants to know when she can start coming to the meetings." And the room got a bunch of chuckles. And for a moment, I was like just stone cold, you know, just watching the grandmaster. And this member, who's older, he said, "I'm serious."
Mm-hmm.
And everybody got quiet. And, you know, the Grand Lodge officers didn't have much to say because they don't really have a reason other than to say it's just never going to happen.
We can't do it.
We can't do it because it's, quote-unquote, ancient charges. You know, whatever. The thing is that I just feel like...
You know where how it's going to happen? I feel how it's going to happen. A Grand Lodge or several Grand Lodges or many Grand Lodges are going to recognize another Grand Lodge that allows women. They won't specifically allow them into their lodge at first. It'll happen slow. It'll be like recognition of another country or recognition of another, I guess like how we did here with the Prince Hall Lodges. You know, that was a step that progressed Masonry. And if enough Grand Lodges accept a Grand Lodge that allows women, I don't think all the other Grand Lodges will just start booting them all out. So once you have a situation, a conundrum, where one Grand Lodge links to a Grand Lodge that allows women, that'll open the door to making it more regular, more balanced.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the key too is the other side of that argument is guys who will say, "Well, it's a fraternity," and to that I say, okay, so where do you stand if I said now you can have women lodges and men lodges, and they can have co-events anytime they want to? And we recognize each other's work and we're on the level. And business meetings they can go to, they can come to degrees, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. Like, how do you feel about that? And I think a lot of times it takes them a minute to think about an answer to that. Because at that point, now they're looking deep.
You're removing their obstacles. Well, you can also point to the word fraternity. There's the Fraternal Order of Police. I'm sorry, women can't be police officers either?
Yeah.
So I get the calls from them all the time looking for money. I'm fairly certain there are women police officers.
Yeah, I think so. What's the key to having spousal support? You know, there's a lot of guys out there who go to lodges and their wives are like, "You have fun with your men's theater group later." They say, you know, they don't buy into what we do. They don't like it. There are guys who say, "You should come to the event with me. You know, I've had guys who have been installed as officers and their wives don't come because it's just not their thing, or guys who've been installed worshipful master and they're not there, you know, and I just feel bad. Like, I want to know why they don't have that support, or what. I always feel like, what can I do to, like, tell your wife or your husband, like, how amazing this is, mm-hmm. you know, like, what's the deal? So what, in your, I know Tracy has been supportive, and I remember she was there when you were installed, mm-hmm. and your girls were there. Mm-hmm. What's the key to good spousal support? What do you think?
I guess for me it started a while ago. I used to play cards once a night for 15 years with the same group of guys. It ended a decade ago. So she was already used to the idea of, you know, me having an outlet away from her, and I think she actually started to like, isn't time for you to leave the house, you know, time for you to, for us to have our own space. And, you know, my wife Tracy, she loves to work out, so she has her own friends at the health club, you know, we each have our own events, our own things that allow us to not have to be on each other all the time.
Yeah.
We're independent as well as, you know, dependent on each other. She's met the guys, you know, she knows, and she also says, you could be out doing a lot of worse things, you know?
Yeah.
At least I know you're at Lodge, you know, with your men's theater group, or you're, you know, that's not a term that she uses, but everything is Lodge. You know, you'll be at Lodge. And she knows that there's possibly going to be some after Lodge drinks and cigars. That's, you know, acceptable to her. She, you know, I could be out doing other things that she would rather me not be doing.
Yeah. Okay. So we're down to the last two questions. One I'm going to ask you about, and the second question actually comes from Andrew Oxford, who is the last worshipful master that we interviewed, and I feel like his question could touch on the question I'm about to ask you. Mm. So mm-hmm. in your opinion, what do you think the solution, now I, again, the way I'm proposing this question is bias. I'm coming from a Grand Lodge bias here.
Okay.
What do you think the solution to the membership problem is?
Of Masons declining? Masonry declining? Masonry. Or non-attendance or non...
essentially, we lose more Masons than we gain. Right. So what's the problem, I guess, would be the loss of Masons.
Sure.
Taking deaths out of the equation, we're looking at, you know, non-payment of dues or guys who just don't come back. What's the solution there?
The solution. Well, first, the problem, I think, is that 100 years ago, after men were coming back from World War I, they were looking for a group. They were looking for a brotherhood like that they'd had when they were overseas, that they could, you know, a group of men that they could hang out with. And that motion then propelled the United States. And through World War II, the numbers swelled. And this was also a time when there was little to do outside, you know, the home. You didn't have all the distractions we have today. We have, you know, hundreds of TV shows that we could watch. We have sports on every night of the week that we could watch. We have bars at corners. We have, you know, friends we can text and call, and Facebook we could stick our faces and do all hours of the night. There's lots of distractions. So to carve out a distraction, a social time, is difficult. And then our marketing is poor as well, you know.
So when you say we have poor marketing, what would you say, what's the worst marketing thing we do? Don't do?
Well, if you were to just ask a random couple of people on the street, what do you know about Freemasonry? They're going to tell you probably it's a secret cult. You know, that's so our marketing has pegged down the line to we're a secret cult.
Okay.
It's something that traditionally we didn't talk about. You know, that was something you found out that you were a brother, or you found out, you know, a friend of yours was a Mason, or a family member was a Mason, and that's what opened the dialogue. But we got so, you know, we can't tell anybody, we have to, you know, it used to be that you couldn't ask someone to be a Mason, you couldn't tell them about Freemasonry, they had to ask you first. Well, you know, that's maybe at a time when there was nothing else to do, that was something people wanted to ask, but nowadays... Why, I'm not going to step out of my shell and ask you about this secret cult. If, you know, I can go watch reruns of Charmed.
Yeah. All right.
So the membership problem is, I would say, a lot of it's marketing. A lot of it's, we don't know. Even within Masons, who've been Masons for a decade, it's hard for them to pinpoint a few small things that describe what Masonry is to them. You can get all kinds of crazy and tell about the friendships and the, you know, the stories and the ritual and the, you know, the esoteric side of it and the philosophy. But to try and cram all that stuff into a 30-minute, you know, speech to somebody, a 30-second what this is speech is hard to do. And Masons, you know, the tagline, we take good men and make them better. You know, that's so bad. It's so vague.
Yeah. Yeah, I almost wish that would just be relegated to the to books of antiquity, farther back than even the peculiar system of morality veiled in allegory illustrated by symbols. I would rather tell them that than we take good men and make them better.
So I don't know the answer of how to fix our marketing. That's not my my forte, but...
Oh, you're a smart guy. You fix it, Mikey.
I'll get on it.
So this question is from Andrew Oxford, right? So he says, how do you feel about multiple candidate degrees up to and including a Grand Master's class, also known as a Blue Lightning? So I should kind of define this a little bit. Grand Master's class is essentially that you are not a Mason yet, and you get a first, second, and third degree in a day. And a Blue Lightning is defined when you get a first degree, and it's been a while, and you're just hanging out, and you still need the second and third degree. So they schedule up to 15 people to get a second and third degree in the same day, right, back to back. So how do you feel about multiple candidate degrees? Blue Lightnings, Grandmaster classes, how do you feel about them generally? And you can talk about whether you love them, hate them, whether they work, they don't work, or whether you just don't care.
Thank you, Brother Andrew, for this question. Let me tell you, first of all, though, if you're lucky enough on a Grand Master's day, you might also, after your day is done, leave with your 32nd degree in a fez. They also, I've heard of Grand Master's days throwing in the 4th and 32nd and also the sands, so you can you know, get your pendant bodies filled in one day. I don't have an issue, really. I mean, well, let me preface this. I was looking for Masonry. I had a feeling of what it was about, and I already committed to. I knew that this was something I was going to get involved in and stick to. I mean, at least that was the plan. So I came through on a Blue Lightning. I did my first degree, returned long form, and then it took a while to schedule, and all of a sudden someone said, you're going to do a Blue Lightning. You want to do a Blue Lightning? I said, I don't know what's that. They're like, yeah, you want to do a Blue Lightning. Well, you get your second and third degree. Okay. I didn't know any different.
Right.
Well, I don't think it's ruined me as a Mason because I sat and watched the second and third degrees. I did not participate in them at all. I have seen and participated in many second and third degrees since then.
I've watched you obligate probably 10 people, so, yeah. Right.
So, I mean, if someone's looking and they're... Definitely some people going through the degrees can be indoctrination. It can be a way of getting them over the hump to be committed. I would hope they would already be there. I mean, I'm not saying our degrees are for that, but, you know, you think of like a basic training, or you think of a thing like that where it can take and mold people. I'm sure some people benefit from that. But I know many, many Masons who've gone through on a multiple degree or Blue Lightning or even a Master's Day and are great Masons with us a decades from. So I don't think that is a defining factor. If a lodge can do the work, I think it should. Because of logistics and time, I don't have a problem with doing a couple of candidates at a time. I don't believe that, you know, we have to say that every candidate must be by themselves for every first, second, and third degree. It's difficult to coordinate, again, with all of our busy lives, perhaps all of those evenings.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on really all your points. I used to feel really, I used to not like them. Internal work revealed that was because I had a problem with them getting something in a day that took me 4 months. That's not their problem, it's mine. And the facts that Brother John Ruark from the Masonic Roundtable has shown this, as well as illustrious Brother Christopher Hodapp, has published lots of articles and opinions and data to show that there is the same amount of retention regardless of how a candidate comes through. So to cheapen somebody's worth as a brother by, you know, saying they're a one-day class mason or whatever is just, it's hogwash. And unfortunately, until we figure out, I think, what our marketing should be, and I think until we figure out exactly what and how and what really works, it's throwing spaghetti on the wall and seeing what sticks. 10% of it sticks. But yeah, I think a great question, Worshipful Oxford. A good question, I think, for Mike specifically, because he came through in that way.
It's like you knew.
It's like you knew, and you didn't. but I also intentionally lined up Brother Mike here to come after Brother Oxford because they're both Illinois Masons, and I thought it would complement each other.
Did he mention our ritual, our militaristic ritual as well?
I don't think he mentioned the militaristic ritual. Maybe he did. I'll have to go back and listen. But in any case, Worshipful Brother Michael Blasius, Rising Sun 115, thanks for your time. It's been a late evening. We just finished conferring an eighth and ninth degree on Companion Blasius this evening. So he was lucky enough to get all that out of the way. We did it all in one night, 8 and 9.
I survived.
He survived. And so we're just hanging out in the dining room. And so now he's going to go next door and have a cigar.
I am, at a Cuban experience. A little plug there. Thank you, Right Worshipful Brother RJ. I appreciate the interview.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
All right. I hope you enjoyed the interview. I know I had a lot of fun. We had just finished up, actually, the eighth and ninth degree for Brother Blasius that evening, and then we started to do this interview. So big thanks goes out to Mike for hanging out late and allowing us to do that interview. Next, I'd like to go into a touching segment with illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison.
I have a vivid memory of the first time I went into a Masonic lodge. I was 15 years old and had arrived with my dad for my De Molay initiation. The room, a magnificent leather chair-filled lounge, was bustling with activity. In back, boys were playing pool and billiards. To one side was a table tennis table with a match going on and a big crowd watching. I worked my way over to the table tennis match and joined the crowd. A wiry man, the chapter dad, was playing one of the older De Molay boys. The De Molay youth was tall, thin, an athletic type. He was quick and clearly good at the game. But the older man was, as they say, cleaning his clock. Wow, I thought. That older guy is pretty good. Oh, he was pretty good, all right. In fact, as I later learned, he was and remains the best United States table tennis player ever. Known, in fact, as the Babe Ruth of table tennis. His name was Jimmy McClure. Born September 28, 1916, Jimmy was a superstar right out of the gate. He was a quick learner and a great dancer. So good, in fact, he occasionally performed with the likes of Dick Powell without ever having had a single dance lesson. As a youngster, he began playing tennis at age 12 and won many championships over the next few years. Likely on his way to a budding tennis career, a rainy day in 1932 changed things for him. That day, Jimmy's tennis game with his friends was a washout. About to call it quits, one of the boys suggested they all come over to his house, where he had what he called a ping-pong table in the basement. Jimmy and the others followed their friend downstairs, where they found the table. Jimmy picked up one of the strange-looking paddles. It was the first time he had ever seen one. In a sense, he would never put it down again. Only a year later, He stood in another venue holding something just as unfamiliar, the United States Open Championship Trophy. In practically a single step, he had advanced from a complete beginner to being the best table tennis player in the country. Jimmy's first U.S. championship was no fluke. His slight build, extraordinary coordination, and lightning quickness were ideal for the sport. Up until the time World War II interrupted his career, Jimmy won no less than 6 additional major championships. He was a legitimate superstar. To top it all off, in 1937, Jimmy was selected for the United States Swathling Cup team. The Swathling Cup is roughly the table tennis equivalent of golf's Davis Cup, given to the world championship team each year. With Jimmy as its anchor and best player, that 1937 team won the United States' first and only Swathling Cup. As with so many other athletes of the era, World War II put an end to the fun. Jimmy put his career on hold and enlisted in the Navy, serving as a radio man in the South Pacific. When the war was over, 29-year-old McClure resumed his career. Aging by table tennis standards, Jimmy competed for 10 more years, winning his final championship in 1956. By the end of his playing career, Jimmy had 6 national titles and 5 world championships to his credit. Without the war, there would certainly have been more. Once settled back home after the war, McClure opened a sports and trophy shop and then looked back to that seminal year of 1932. That was not only the year he first played table tennis, but it was also the year his uncle, James Hodgson, introduced him to the Masonic fraternity. At his uncle's suggestion, Jimmy joined Indianapolis Chapter, Order of De Molay, where he eventually served as master counselor. After World War II, given his positive experience in De Molay, he decided to join the Masons. Together with his father, he joined Oriental Lodge No. 500, the Indianapolis Scottish Rite, and Murat Shrine. In 1966, he became Oriental's worshipful master. After his playing career was over, Brother Jimmy served as a sports administrator at the highest levels, including the board of directors of the United States Olympic Committee, where he single-handedly mounted a successful campaign to distribute the money equally among large and small sports. Jimmy passed away in February 2005. He remains the only United States player in the Table Tennis Hall of Fame. The years Brother Jimmy McClure spent traveling the world representing the United States Olympic Committee, his country, and indeed Masonry, earned respect all around the globe. He is recognized throughout the world for his efforts on behalf of sports, but remains relatively unknown in his own country. Still, for those who know table tennis, his legacy remains intact as the United States' greatest player. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
Well, that's about it for this week. I hope you all enjoyed the program and that I didn't inundate you too much with the ways to support the show in the beginning of the episode. I just wanted to get them out of the way. You know, whether you listen to those things every week or you power through them with your plus 15 seconds or whatever, maybe you listen to the show in chipmunk mode, whatever it is, I do appreciate you powering through that. And more especially to those of you who actually go to those ways to support the program and give back to the show so that we can keep on providing you quality Masonic education. Before we go, I just want to remind everybody, please continue to check out the Midnight Freemasons every single week, 3 times mostly. It being the summer months, sometimes we miss a post or we're a little late, but we try to get up at least 3 articles every single week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And I have to give a huge shout out because by the time you listen to this Sunday night, my listeners of this show, you guys are going to be keyed in on something really cool. Brother Scott Duball, Worshipful Brother Duball, State Education Officer for the state of Illinois, has accepted a offer to become a regular contributor to the Midnight Freemasons blog. So huge thanks goes out to him. And also a huge shout out to Worshipful Brother Darren A. Lonners. I hope I pronounced your last name correctly. These guys have both written some tremendous articles for us, and we wanted to ask them if they would be cool enough to agree to write an article a month or more, and they said they would. So really excited about that. Look for that content. It's coming. We're going to have a nice welcome piece for them on Monday morning, and we will then have pieces from them periodically, as we have from all of our Midnight Freemason contributors, guys like Todd Creason, Worshipful Brother Greg Knott, Illustrious Steve Harrison, Worshipful Bill Hosler, Adam Thayer, Brother Dan Doc Gentry, Wayne Greenlee, our Australian correspondent, and of course, huge thanks again. Thanks so much, guys, for all of your assistance. And thanks to all our readers who are checking out those great articles. You're going to be reading some amazing articles as well over on the Illinois Lodge of Research. You know, we've relaunched the Illinois Lodge of Research with a passion. Worshipful master of that Lodge of Research is Jim Tome. Worked his butt off to get this thing up and running in a modern way, and I think we've done that pretty well. There's a blog now, and for the first time in a long time, our transactions or our research papers are going to exceed 50 pages. It's going to be pretty amazing. For this next edition of the Illinois Lodge of Research, you'll be able to read pieces by me and Scott Duball and likely Ira Gilbert and Milton Kaufman and many other writers. So we're really excited about that. So please show them some love. We can't all be Missouri Lodge of Research, who is, you know, I had mentioned California Lodge of Research in the past, and Brother Steve Harrison said, hey, you should check out the Missouri Lodge of Research, and I did, and I wish I hadn't, because now I measure everything to the Missouri Lodge of Research, which has produced pretty much the most amazing stuff you could imagine, you know, books and magazines and content for years to come. So big shout out to Missouri Lodge of Research as well. And last but not least, if you like these Masonic podcasts, I would urge you to then check out the Masonic Roundtable. I have missed so many episodes recently. I've been incredibly busy on Tuesdays. I do apologize for my absence, but we've got Mike Hambrick on, who is amazing. We've still got John and Jason and the incredible Juan Sepulveda. So again, make sure you're checking that out. Tuesday nights, 10, 9 central. It's live. You can interact with the show via Twitter while it's happening on Google Plus or on YouTube. It's a fun time. And guess what? That's it. So again, thank you all so much. I appreciate each and every one of you. Until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.